TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg.
Good save, Pavlik, rebound.
Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets, a division of Bell Media.
If you want to know the real deal about the three, we're going to take it with triple chop, and we're going to bring you up to speed.
TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at tsn1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Bright and early, I'm happy to say we are all here. We all made it plenty of time, probably the earliest we've ever shown up for a 7 o'clock show. So kudos to you, gentlemen. Well done. Coming up on today's program, we're going to be joined by Mike Colligan from thehockeywriters.com. He's their Pittsburgh correspondent. Jets obviously play the Penguins next Friday, so we're going to talk to Colligan about the Penguins. We saw them about 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago more accurately, see how their season has progressed since then. And then for the final 2 hours of today's program, your comprehensive Jets-Senators preview. We're going to start sort of with the rest of the world of the NHL, and then we're going to move into the Jets starting at around 8 a.m. this morning. It is McPhillips Toyota game day here on TSN 1290. The Jets are in Ottawa to meet the Ottawa Senators. Puck drop on this fine station at 1 p.m. Rick Ralph and the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show commences at noon. Hustler and Lawless follow us at 10 a.m. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website is www.illegalcurve.com. And I'll leave it to the man to my immediate left, Ezra Ginsberg, to advise the audience of our Instagram account.
Not sure why, but yeah, Instagram is...
Well, you're the Instagrammer.
I don't think I am actually Instagramming, but it's a legal curve for anybody who's on there, yeah.
There you go. Richie, good morning to my far left. How are you, bud?
Ezzy's a self-proclaimed king of social media.
I think other people have proclaimed it. Not even self-proclaimed. Other people have proclaimed it. He's pretty good on there. He's a pretty big deal.
He's a pretty big deal.
I know. Not just the beard.
You go out socially in Winnipeg, people know Ezzy.
Yeah, that's true. Anyways, let's get started by looking at today's action in the NHL. A very quiet Friday night last night. Dallas beat Anaheim 3-1. That was the only game in the NHL last night. Dallas on home ice took care of business. They were able to beat Hiller started the net for Anaheim and got pulled, after giving up 2 goals on 16 shots. And then Victor Fast, who's sort of been a really surprise for the Anaheim Ducks so far this year, came in and played the third period, wasn't able to keep Anaheim in the game. So Dallas was able to defeat them 3-1.
Dallas doesn't have Ray Whitney right now. He's injured. But aside from that, they're healthy and they're looking a lot better. Derek Roy's return to the lineup, as he's done wonders for them as far as I'm concerned. You know, he can kind of drive that second line and he can drive that second power play unit, and they have depth. And that, and we talked on our debut Wednesday show about the first line of Jamie Benn, Jaromir Jagr, and Brendan Morrow. Well, they come at you on the second line with, you could argue, well, close to as much talent.
Mm-hmm.
And without Ray Whitney, it kind of allows each guy on their squad to slot in, which is important because sometimes when you have too many of the same player, you know, the guy who's playing third line minutes but thinks he should be playing second, and then the second line guy doesn't necessarily feel comfortable. That's all important. So Derek Roy's quarterback in that second unit. You have Michael Ryder with a great shot. And the Dallas team is a team to watch for. And you have Louis Erickson and a guy who I think we've talked about in this show many times. Fast, can do a lot of things.
Yeah.
Shoot, pass, really good all around two way player. So that's a nice top six. It's coming into form, and they got some nice young defensemen. So Dallas is starting to look on the up and up,
despite Anaheim's loss last night. And it's granted a little bit random that we're talking about Anaheim at 5 minutes after 7 in the morning, but that's okay. We'll get into everything else as we get going. Despite Anaheim's loss last night, they're 7-2-1 in the first 10 games. You know, a mirage team, you know, for real.
Well, yeah, it was a quiet night in the NHL last night. Fast has been kind of a not only a surprise, no one had really heard of him. He was playing in the Swedish league, and he's been very well. Yesterday was actually his first loss. But the Ducks obviously have that top line, and they've gotten bigger on defense. And, you know, I actually thought they played pretty well in the first period. If you watch yesterday's game, there was a lot of fisticuffs actually in the first period. Corey Perry got into a fight, and then the game kind of quieted it down as Dallas kind of got into a defensive mode. But, you know, the Anaheim Ducks are a team that surprised me definitely with their early start. But you look at a guy like Daniel Winnick was off to a hot start in the early part of the season. Well, what's happened there is they've actually dropped Saku Koivu down to the third line, and he's benefiting from playing with a guy like Saku Koivu. But you know, the Ducks obviously lost last night, and the Stars have started to turn it around a little bit. And, you know, Jaromir Jagr, again, scored the overtime goal on Thursday night. But, again, he continues to impress. Richie mentioned Louis Eriksson. Eriksson had a goal and an assist yesterday after not scoring for a few games. But I look at the Dallas Stars, and they're a team that desperately wants to get back into the playoffs. They're in a very tough division. We expect both the Sharks and the Kings, obviously, to make the playoffs. So they're probably going to have to beat out the Ducks to get in the playoffs. But I've liked the moves they've made. And you know, they still have the same decor, Richie. You know, Trevor Daley, Robida, Goligoski was benched the other night. He came back and had a strong game. So they're not looking too bad in that Western Conference, which is basically a logjam of teams trying to catch up to the Sharks and Hawks.
The key to their, I think, to their season is really their young. You mentioned their defense, and that core is important, obviously. But I think what's really important is to play their young defenseman, Dylan Oleksiak. I think it's Oleksiak is the pronunciation.
He's about 6'8".
He is, and on the back end, I mean, if you can get really nice play from your young defenders, they've come at a cheaper price, and they have a nice balance between the youth and the veterans. And Dylan Oleksiak are both pretty physical. And, you know, you mentioned Ezzie Robida, Daley and Goligoski, all undersized defensemen. Now, Robida is physical for his size, and Daley won't back down. Goligoski is a little more apt to back down a little bit. But the point is, with three small defensemen, Dylan and Oleksiak really do solidify them in terms of some youth, but some size and toughness.
So it's Brendan Dylan
living with Robida
and Jamie Oleksiak. Okay, it sounded like you were saying Dylan Oleksiak, and I was like, who is that player? But anyways, now I'm on board with you. Brendan Dylan and Jamie Oleksiak of the Dallas Stars, some of the key to their success so far this year. Moving to today's action in the NHL, to me, I mean, the marquee game that jumps out at me is certainly a potential Eastern Conference final preview. It was the Eastern Conference final 2 years ago. Tampa Bay in Boston to play against the Boston Snowstorms. Nothing?
Boston snowstorms.
You know, there's a big snowstorm going on in Boston. Nothing that went right over both your heads?
Well, it didn't go over my head. It just wasn't funny.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. At least I got some sort of reaction at that point in time, even if it's you throwing me under. Anyways, Tampa Bay plays Boston tonight, a game this evening that really is a potential Eastern Conference preview, final preview. I know it's a little bit early, but those two teams look very strong.
They both look very strong, Drew, and it's a possibility. I mean, there's so many possibilities for Eastern Conference previews now. But Tampa and Boston, you know, Tampa looks good. It's an interesting contrast in styles a little bit. Boston's more of that bruising team and the team that's more apt to kind of push you around, whereas Tampa's more of a finesse team. So I'm interested to see what that matchup brings out tonight.
Other games today in the Eastern Conference. Pittsburgh plays at New Jersey. Carolina plays at Philadelphia. Of course, Winnipeg plays at Ottawa. And then Toronto plays Montreal. It's always a good game and an entertaining game when Toronto and Montreal play each other, especially when the game's in Montreal because, you know, the crowd is alive for it.
Got to mention it's Hockey Day in Canada today as well.
Right.
Pittsburgh and New Jersey play again tomorrow, too. That's probably the game I'm looking most forward to, aside from, obviously, the Senators-Jets game coming up in, 5 hours? Seems so early. Pittsburgh is winners of five in a row now, and the Devils are going pretty strong here.
In terms of TV schedule, as I'll ask this to you also, why wouldn't they do a 12 o'clock game, a 3 o'clock game, a 6 o'clock game, and a 9 o'clock game?
You mean for Hockey Day in Canada?
Yeah.
It's a good question. I've always wondered that. And they never have. They've always, ever since, well, last year when the Jets came back, they've been doing this. They split the audience for the afternoon game. Edmonton's at Detroit this afternoon at the same time that the Jets are at are playing in Ottawa. It's always, I find it a little bit odd myself, but obviously the powers that be in the TV world have their reasons. But it's a good question. You know, we'll have to ask our good friend Bruce Daubing in that question at a later date. Other games tonight, the second half of the doubleheader tonight, Calgary at Vancouver is the last game on the NHL schedule tonight. Calgary playing without Mika Kiprusov, but they were able to get the win. Leland Irving was able to come in and get the win for them a couple nights ago.
Any, you know, even if Kiprusov comes back, and they obviously rely heavily on him, it'll be good to get him a break, even if he's injured. But they need to be able to prove that a guy who they put on waivers earlier in the year mm-hmm. can do something for them. And Calgary's changed their style a bit, and we talked to Kelly Rudy about it on Wednesday, in that as they're a little more of a puck possession team now than they were before. So maybe that helps limit the scoring chances. They're playing a Vancouver team that's playing well. I expect that to be a close game without Kessler in the lineup. It'll be, you know, you got that number one line, and Calgary will try and match up against the sitting Twins. But I do like what Calgary's done in terms of the production this year. You can talk about their overall vision and have some issue with it. But overall this year, I mean, Hudler and Cervenka have looked good. And they do change the complexion of the team as far as I'm concerned.
Agreed. Calgary played the fewest number of games in the NHL so far. Only 8 games this season. This will be their 9th, so they're getting a little bit closer to getting even with a lot of teams. But a team like Dallas has played 12 games already, and Calgary's only there at 8, which is a bit of obviously a quirk in the schedule so far. Anyways, that is the bulk of the games in the NHL for this Saturday. It's Saturday, which means it's hockey, so that's always a good day to kick back, relax, and enjoy some hockey. Let's go to break. When we come back, NHL news and notes. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's McPhillips Toyota Winnipeg Jets game day on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. McPhillips Toyota game day, the Jets and the Senators. Puck drop 1 p.m. from the nation's capital. Did you guys know I used to live in Ottawa?
You mentioned it a time or two on the show.
Okay, just wanted to make sure that you guys knew about that and everything. Anyways, you can follow us on Twitter, follow us on Facebook, and you can go to our website, where I am sure that the Winnipeg Jets morning papers will be up momentarily as soon as Dave Minuk wakes up. If he isn't already awake, of course.
We were out last night. I wonder if
he, Dave might be a bit of a late night for Dave?
I might. Not that there was a late night, Drew.
Yeah.
You made an assumption there. But if it were a late night, if it was a late night, excuse me, Dave may be a little bit late on the papers today.
We'll have to see.
NHL news and notes.
NHL news and notes for this Saturday morning. We're going to start with Boston and the New York Islanders in one of the more curious trades of all time in the NHL. Tim Thomas, who is not playing and is suspended by the Boston Bruins as a result, has been traded to the New York Islanders in exchange for a conditional second-round draft pick in 2014-2015. You might ask, why would the Islanders acquire a player who has made it clear he has no interest in playing this season? Likely never again in the NHL, would be my guess.
Well, I mean, he did indicate he may want to return next year.
Yeah, maybe. It's just so that these New York Islanders can reach the salary cap floor. Should this move be allowed under the NHL guidelines, or should this... Is this a loophole in the CBA that needs to be resolved?
Well, I guess the question then, Drew, would be what would you have the rule be?
Well, the in the new CBA, they prevented bonuses from being included mm-hmm. in your total in order to reach the salary cap floor
in the current year.
In the current year, exactly right. So, I mean, the Islanders were a team that would often give out or write into contracts bonuses right. as an artificial way to raise their salary cap so that it reached the floor.
That were unattainable is what you're saying.
Yeah, they were unattainable. They weren't realistic bonuses. But sure, I'll put in a $5 million bonus for you, random player that'll never achieve it. It gets me that much closer to getting to the salary cap floor where I'm mandated that I have to be.
And just to further explain it for our listeners, what you mean is if you were a player who signed a $2 million deal with a $1 million bonus. Yeah. I don't know if bonuses are that high, but what it would be is in this current year, you'd have a cap hit of $3 million. If you didn't attain the levels necessary to achieve that bonus, all that would happen is there would be no $1 million charge against next year's cap.
Right. Exactly right. So, I mean, it's an artificial way to get to bump you up, and the NHL and the NHLPA agreed to remove that loophole from the CBA.
Well, let's talk about from the PA perspective. You don't want kind of fake money
right
on the books. So if there's a $1 million that takes you to the bottom of the cap, if it's not really ever going to be paid, why would you want it on there?
I agree. It seems like, this is going to be included in hockey-related revenue as a percentage of it, and, you know, nobody's getting paid, so none of the players really can be that happy about it. It just seems like it's something that, you're not going to account for everything in the course of a CBA negotiation, but it does seem to be something that they would want to maybe look at as they're moving from the MOU to a full comprehensive document and decide if it's something that they want to change or not change.
I see your point there, but I mean, what if Tim Thomas decides he wants to play in a month?
Yeah, I mean, then the cap hit should hit in a month.
Right, fair enough, but it's also a huge cap hit, so there is a little bit of risk there. That, if the Islanders want to get to the bottom of the cap, Drew.
Yeah.
Say he wants to play, or say he decides to play next year and he's suspended. I mean, and say next year, what about this? Next year, the Islanders spend a little bit of money, and then Thomas says, I want to come back. And then they're $6 million over the floor, way more than they want to be spending before they move to Brooklyn.
Again, it's a fair point, and it is a calculated risk that the Islanders are taking. But, the Islanders have to assume that there's no chance Tim Thomas is going to ever end up playing for him. Because they would, if he comes back and he plays one game for them, they're on the hook for a second-round draft pick going to Boston.
Also a good point, Drew. And we're looking at it from a collective bargaining perspective. If you look at it from a New York Islanders fan perspective, spend some money.
Well, obviously. I mean, it's ridiculous that you even have to make this move just to get to the salary cap floor.
Ridiculous.
I mean, that goes without saying. And this is after they've been signing guys left and right, and they signed contract extensions for guys that they're picking up off waivers. They're signing these guys to four-year contract extensions for the minimum NHL salary. I mean, yeah, I understand the logic about it. You're hoping that guy outplays the fact that he's a replacement-level player in the NHL. But if he doesn't, you're paying him for 4 years. I mean, it's no surprise here when I say there's curious decisions being made in the Islanders' front office.
Just very odd, and just the contracts you've mentioned, and signing guys to minimum level. I don't actually necessarily mind that, the theory behind that, but it's the purpose for what they're doing it is puts me off a bit.
Yeah. Moving on, the Philadelphia Flyers, a team that is a little bit lacking in defense, I think most people would say, signed Kimmo Timonen to a one-year, $6 million contract extension. He was scheduled to be an unrestricted free agent after this season. Ezzie, Kimmo Timonen and the Flyers, a good match. They seem to have been for a number of years now.
Absolutely. He's been their number one defenseman for a long time and signs a one-year deal. Kimmo Timonen has done it all for the Flyers for a long time. He's an unbelievable skater, quarterbacks of the power play. He can go out there in all situations. And you mentioned that, Drew, the Philadelphia Flyers are obviously short on D, unfortunately, and they've kind of struggled a little bit out of the gates, out of a playoff spot right now. But yeah, it's a good signing. It's a one-year signing, but keep in mind, Kimmo Timonen's been in the NHL for a long time. He was with the Predators for, I want to say, 7 or 8 years. So,
yeah, he's no spring chicken, that's for sure. He's definitely up there in age. So,
yeah,
it's a
good time to get the signing done. Obviously, you don't have to wait till later on in the season. So, that's kind of one of those signings which was a no-brainer for Paul Holmgren, and obviously that was something that they had expected to do early on the season.
As he says, no-brainer, and it is a no-brainer because you lose Pronger. You're only signing him to an extra year. He wants to stay in the NHL.
Yeah.
He's been a good soldier. He can skate. He can move the puck. He's not the biggest guy in terms of physicality and that aspect, but in terms of solid defensive and offensive defenseman, he really does bring all the attributes to the table. Not as good as he once was, but certainly isn't washed up by any means.
No, 37 years old. He was drafted in the 10th round of the 1993 NHL entry draft back then, 250th overall. So one of those guys that when you hear late-round draft picks that really reach it and do very well, you think of the Detroit Red Wings. Kimmo Timonen's a guy like that, certainly somebody that came out of nowhere.
Out of interest, who drafted him?
The Los Angeles Kings, 1993. 10th round, 250th overall.
I mean, they don't even have the 10th round anymore.
No, they don't even have the 8th round anymore. They stopped it after a while. This would be a guy who nowadays would be an unsigned free agent if he gets a chance. And
those are increasing in popularity.
Sure. Well, it doesn't, you know, you can find, sometimes you find a late bloomer that way or anything along those lines. Continuing on, Thomas Vanek, wanted to talk about him and his start to the year. Because he's just been absolutely dynamite for the Buffalo Sabres so far. Leads the NHL in scoring. He's got 21 points. He leads the NHL in goals. He's got 10 goals. You know, Thomas Vanek is a guy who's always had a ton of talent. Can he keep up this pace?
No, not this pace, but he's a great player. And I think one thing that, you know, is he more motivated or not? Hard to tell. Because we're not following Buffalo on a day-to-day basis, although I've watched them quite a bit this year. But he is developing great chemistry with Cody Hodgson and Jason Palmerville. And Cody Hodgson here, that deal looks great for them. Buffalo, again, is kind of a team of talent. Lindy Ruff doesn't seem to be able to get them on the same page. But Vanek has maybe taken a little bit more of a leadership role this year. Drew, following him back to his USHL days and his University of Minnesota days, nobody ever has doubted the talent of Thomas Vanek. And he's huge. People don't realize that sometimes, how big he is. So the natural ability has always been there. Has he turned it on and become that and taken it to the next step from star to superstar? Not confident enough to say that yet, but he's always had the ability to be that player.
You know, Buffalo's got two guys in the top seven of the NHL in scoring, and then you have to look all the way down to the just about the bottom of the Eastern Conference, only above Washington, to find the Buffalo Sabres in the standings. 4-6-1 through 11 games, 9 points. You know, obviously, offense hasn't really been the problem. What's been the problem for the Buffalo Sabres so far this year, Ez?
Maybe not necessarily total offense, but they've had trouble getting secondary offense. Absolutely. Just on the Vanek start, he's definitely not going to be able to hold up his pace. 21 points in 10 games. But, you know, if you look at his stats year after year, he's always a 30-goal scorer. And you know, Richie mentioned he might be taking the step from star to a superstar. But, you know, he's been an excellent scorer for them for a really long time. But yeah, the problem in Buffalo is also they've had tons of injuries on the back end. Myers hasn't been good. Sakara's injured right now. And they're using, young defensemen. And really, if you look after the problem, and right now, if San Jose and Chicago and Boston have proven anything, it's that you need four lines to score. And right now, Buffalo has that really good top line. Cody Hodgson's playing really well as kind of his first year, obviously, as a first-line center. But, you know, Ennis has started to come on lately, but they need other guys to step up. I think Ville-Leino, they're concerned that his injury is going to be a little bit more serious than originally expected. But I would say that's more so their problem early on. I mean, it's not Ryan Miller is an excellent goaltender. It's not that. It's injuries at the bad time, and their secondary guys aren't putting the puck in the net.
John Erskine of the Washington Capitals was suspended for 3 games for his hit on Philadelphia Flyers' Wayne Simmonds. Mm-hmm. You know, sort of a pretty cut-and-dry, you know, play. I don't think anybody's really quibbling with the suspension. Yet, you know, Wayne Simmonds is an interesting guy in that he came out and with a quote that he harbors no ill will towards John Erskine as a result of the hit. I don't think it was intended to hurt me, Simmonds explained. If I thought it was, I would have said something. He's a big, strong, stay-at-home D-man. I don't think I've ever seen him try to hurt someone.
Fair comment, Drew. I mean, he had never been suspended before this. John Erskine hadn't. And you know what? John Erskine, just for people who aren't necessarily aware of his skill set, it's limited. Not a great skater. Big guy, tough guy. But he got caught flat-footed, and he's not a great skater, Drew. Not great offensively. And so he put out his hand, or his kind of a forearm shiver to stop Wayne Simmonds. Probably a reaction of a guy getting burnt in in the offensive zone, knowing it's going to be a two-on-one or whatever the other way. So, you know, he does that. He regrets it. He's not the type of player. It's not something that's been in his history. And give Simmonds credit for that. Doesn't excuse the fact that he did give him a concussion, it appears. But, you know, the Flyers play a certain style. And so I think it's kind of an accepted fact that if they don't think you're doing it with a malicious intent, they understand that there's a tough aspect of the game that sometimes leads to injuries.
Final point in NHL news and notes on this Saturday morning. The Los Angeles Kings acquired defenseman Keaton Ellerbe from the Florida Panthers for a fifth-round draft pick. Now, you know, I know that Keaton Ellerbe is not the greatest player in the history of the world. Yeah. But was the Florida defense deep enough that they can be trading guys?
Interesting question. I mean, when you get Gudbrandsson and Jovanovski back, you do have probably 8 guys for 6 spots, Drew. I'm surprised Keaton Ellerbe only netted a fifth, only because I think there's other teams in the league who could use the services for a higher fifth. I mean, remember, the fifth-round pick from L.A. is the last pick of the fifth round.
This is the fifth-round pick that they got from New Jersey, so it's going to be the second-last pick of the fifth round.
So second-last pick, so really no difference there. But a guy like Keaton Ellerbe, I mean, he's not going to be an offensive dynamo by any means, but he's not afraid to engage in contact. I mean, you'd feel comfortable with him, and you drop him in your 5 spot, which he was playing in Florida. He can move around a bit. He's not afraid to mix it up. You have to wonder whether some other teams probably weren't interested in a guy like that for such a cheap price. If it doesn't work out, a fifth-round pick, so big deal.
Right.
I mean, if your fifth-round pick turns into a guy like Keaton Ellerbe, you're going to be happy about it.
Sure. Anytime your fifth-round pick becomes a, at the very worst, a rotational defenseman in the NHL, mm-hmm. you probably think your scouts have done a pretty good job in drafting that guy.
I would say so.
I would agree with that. Let's go to break. When we come back, 2 segments on the Canadian Olympic team for 2014 in Sochi, Russia. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is McPhillips Toyota Winnipeg Jets Game Day with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Shortly past 7:30 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. An early start time for us, but that's okay. We love it. It's McPhillips Toyota Winnipeg Jets Game Day. Jets and the Sens get underway at 1 o'clock here on this fine station. Hustler and Lawless follow us at 10 a.m. Early start time for them as well, of course, for Hustler especially. Gary's up by then. And Rick Ralph in the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 12 noon. Gentlemen, 1 year from now, as a country, we will all be pulling our hair out of our head because the 2014 Winter Olympics will have gotten underway. And Team Canada, featuring what we assume will be NHL players, will be taking to the ice to play in a pool. They actually, before we get to the team itself, Canada has a very easy preliminary round-robin pool. They're going to be in a pool with Finland, Norway, and one qualifying team. And that's as a result of They come up with that system based on the results of the past few world championships,
okay,
where Canada has not been tremendously successful. So Canada, I think, is the 5th-ranked nation in the world. I mean, take advantage of it while you can. So they play a round robin to start against Finland, Norway, and I don't know, some of these qualifying teams, Denmark or Slovenia or Belarus or some random country that you wouldn't expect Canada to have too much trouble with. Let's talk about the players on this team, because that's what everyone's going to be talking about for the next year. Let's start with the forwards. We'll spend the bulk of this segment on forwards, and we'll do defensemen and goaltenders on the next segment. I think we have a fairly... Let's see if we can come up with a list of people we agree on that are shoe-ins for this team. Okay. Let's start with that. I mean, the first name that comes to mind, Sidney Crosby, undoubtedly.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so we got Crosby. Stamkos?
Yeah.
We got Stamkos. Anybody else want to jump in? Feel free to jump in whenever you want. Is Ryan Getzlaff a shoe-in on this team?
No.
He's not a shoe-in on this team?
No.
Okay, so we'll leave Getzlaff off to the side for now.
Giroux's a shoe-in.
Yeah, that was the next guy I was going to say, is Claude Giroux.
Yeah.
Okay. Claude Giroux's a shoe-in.
For all intents and purposes, to me, I mean, Rick Nash is a shoe-in, and Jonathan Toews is a shoe-in.
Toews I'm fine with. Toews I'm good with. I have no doubts about Toews. He's, he's probably going to take over, I think, from Ryan Smith as sort of the Captain Canada mantle. Should Rick Nash be a shoe-in on this team?
I mean, who are you putting on ahead of him?
There probably is no one you're going to put on ahead of him. Based on performance, NHL performance, should he be a shoe-in? Has he been dynamite since he left Columbus this year?
Yeah, I mean, 10 games,
yeah.
New environment. Believe me, it's a big switch from Columbus to New York Rangers.
Sure.
The publicity, the pressure, getting to developing chemistry with line mates. I think he's a shoe-in.
Okay. Is he?
I'd agree with Nash as a shoe-in. I mean, with his experience in the World Hockey Championships and obviously the 2010 Olympics, you got to think he's a shoo-in with his size, and she's shown chemistry before with other guys that are going to be shoo-ins on the team as well. I would put him he's going to make the team. I'd be shocked if he doesn't make the team.
Mike Richards?
Yeah.
Shoo-in?
He's there.
Okay. So we've got, so far we have 6 shoo-in forwards so far. You know, are any of the young guys shoo-ins? The guys who weren't there in Vancouver, the Tavareses, does he become a shoo-in?
Yes. Tavares is there.
Tavares is there.
Yep.
Okay, Tavares is a shoo-in. You know, who else is the... Tyler Seguin.
Eric Staal's a shoo-in, too.
Eric Staal.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's a nice player in many reasons, but he can play center and wing, too, which really helps the team.
Is a guy like Tyler Seguin, is he a shoe-in?
No, a shoe-in, Drew. Okay. I mean, a shoe-ins are your really established players, and people say, Mike Richards might be kind of on the fringe. Mike Richards has won too much in his career and can play too many roles, can take face-offs, can play wing or center. Too many roles that he can't be left off the team, in my opinion.
And I think Team Canada also appreciates their loyal soldiers.
Agreed as well.
You go to bat for Team Canada in World Championships or whatever else along those lines, they generally will try and pay it back to you for the big carrot at the end of the stick, which is the Olympics.
I think Jordan Eberle's there.
I was going to say, that was my next person. Is he a shoe-in now?
To me, he's a shoe-in. He adds depth to the right wing. He's so good. He's played for Canada all along, and the guy's clutch. I mean, you don't want a guy like that around him. He makes it for me. Yes?
If you look at the Globe and Mail, there was an article that Kelly Rudy contributed to, Craig Button, Darren Pang, Mike Johnson. They predicted their Canada team. Maybe we'll get Remus to tweet it out. A lot of guys that are picking teams, Ray Ferraro also picked his team on TSN. A lot of guys aren't picking Jerome Iginla, which is surprising. To me, Jerome Iginla, even though he's now been on 3 Olympic teams, if he makes the Sochi team, I still have Jerome Iginla making this team. And for Jerome Iginla to make this team, a guy like Tyler Seguin or a guy like Jordan Eberle can't make the team. And that's when those hard decisions have to be made. And what's surprising to me as well, I mean, you look at a guy that could contribute offense and toughness, which you can debate whether that's useful in the international game, is Milan Lucic. But it's going to come down to this team, if guys like Eberle, Tavares, Seguin, if they all make it, and Tavares, I think we all agree, is probably a lock, then a guy like Iginla is not going to make the team. A guy like Jamie Benn's not going to make the team.
Well, let's talk about Iginla. He's an interesting case, I think. 36 years old by the time the next Olympics rolls around.
Richie, he gives you... And again, Eberle, it's unquestionable what he offers, but when you're talking about the makeup of the team, Richie, you got to think that if you have too many young guys, it's not just all about skill, right? It's about the makeup of the team.
I need to see the actual number of players. You know, instead of just saying, will Iginla make the team, let's go over the actual roster and see if
he fits where you slot people.
Yeah.
Okay, so Crosby, fourth line.
Yeah.
Yeah, fourth line center, right?
So he's your first line center.
Yeah. Stamkos?
You slot him in second.
Second line center?
Yeah.
Giroux?
Yeah, third line.
So you're deep up the middle is what you're saying.
You're very deep up the middle.
Taves?
Fourth line, so.
Okay, so you got your centermen.
You can move those guys around. I mean, you can move Crosby, Giroux, Crosby, Stamkos, even Taves, but Taves is great at draws, and so is Crosby. I mean, you could, we'll go those guys as a top four, but clearly they can play other positions if need be.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Next guy you mentioned as a shoe-in is Rick Nash.
Yeah, so you put him on one of the top wings.
So not sure if we mentioned Corey Perry yet, but to me, he's more of a shoe-in than Seguin or even Eberle, even though Eberle, again, I think it's if you go with too many young guys, but I think Perry is a shoe-in.
Well, I'm going to put him down here so we can discuss him in a little bit more detail coming up in a second. So, Rick Nash, where do you have him? Is he your top line winger?
Put him on the second line.
Second line winger?
Yeah.
Okay. Mike Richards.
You slide him beside Taves like he was in the Olympics for a period of time.
Yeah.
Left side, fourth line.
I mean, when we say fourth line, I mean, these guys will go out there and they'll have their situations to play in.
Right.
And like we saw in Vancouver, if they're the best players, you know, and they go out in whatever role they initially start in, by the end of it, they can certainly be they'll be your number one players or whatever else.
For sure.
When we say first through fourth, it's not like we talk about the Jets first through fourth.
Right. I think it's interesting to mention, too, in 2002 and 2006, they went with the quote-unquote international grind line. If you remember, they took Kirk Maltby and Chris Draper, and there's been a change in kind of Team Canada's philosophy about that. Now you're seeing, if it's Jonathan Toews or Mike Richards or John Tavares, you're seeing now they're not going with a typical makeup of a hockey team where you have a first line, a second line, third line, fourth line, in the sense that there's decreasing in minutes, and it's really now you put out four lines of scorers.
Yeah, you're right.
That's interesting. It used to be different when they would, remember they took Rob Zamner in 98.
Well, Rob Zamner's the most famous one.
Nothing you're against Rob Zamner, but he was on there to be a checker.
Yeah, but what they've done now, and I think this is the right decision, is that they've adapted to, you know, you, superstar scorer, great player, are going to be relied upon to maybe do more of a checking role than you would traditionally do in the NHL.
So long as you have a defensive conscience, yeah, you're able to adjust your game accordingly.
Right. So they're not leaving more talented players at home, right, in exchange for players who fit whatever, well, quote-unquote role it is.
You know, if you remember, you were referring to the 98 Olympics with Rob Zamner. I mean, think back to the 98 Olympics when Paul Kariya gets injured before they go to the Olympics, and then Joe Sakic gets injured in the preliminary round. What happens is when you have a guy like Rob Zamner, everybody gets elevated, or everybody's role changes, and you can't have players who aren't capable of an elevated role in the case of injury.
Exactly right. Tavares.
Where do I put him?
Yeah.
I'd probably slide him onto the left wing of the third line.
Eric Staal was sort of the last of our consensus
top
forwards on
this
team.
Put him on the top side beside Crosby. His ability, I think one thing that's going to be really important for Eric Staal is his skating ability on the big ice is going to be really important.
Yep, I agree. And Staal has played with Crosby before. They had the Staal-Crosby Nash line. A little bit of size to go with Crosby. It's interesting here. I mean, you know, Richie mentioned elevated roles. What's happened now, because there's so many elite scorers, you're going to have possibly six or seven centers. And a guy that we haven't talked that much about is Patrice Bergeron. And when Richie talks about elevated roles, I think of a guy like Patrice Bergeron being able to handle a role like that possibly better than other guys that'll get overlooked. I mean, it's unbelievable when you think that players like Ginla, Getzlaff, Jamie Benn, Brad Richards... I mean, Brad Richards was a huge part of previous Canada teams, and we haven't even mentioned Le Cavalier or St. Louis. Remember in 2010, it was Le Cavalier, St. Louis. We haven't even mentioned Marty St. Louis. It's one of the best offensive players in the NHL. It's unbelievable when you think about it, and again, anything can happen in an Olympic tournament. But again, just based on the forward group alone, you have to think that Canada's the favorite.
Well, let's keep going. Well, actually, we'll probably do forwards into the next commercial. So let's go to break. We'll continue on with forwards, and then we'll go to defensemen and goaltenders. We're going to talk about some of the non-consensus forwards that we think are going to make this team. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. McPhillips Toyota Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets Senators, 1 o'clock here on this fine station. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in the studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. We're continuing to talk about Team Canada for the Sochi Olympics next year. We've identified our shoe-ins for the team: Crosby, Stamkos, Claude Giroux, Jonathan Toews, Rick Nash, Mike Richards, John Tavares, Eric Staal. Who are our secondary guys? The guys who you think there's some debate about. So far, the names we have on that list: Jordan Eberle, Corey Perry, Ryan Getzlaff. Push comes to shove, do you think those three make the team?
Well, my question is, and I've been a Ryan Getzlaff fan, but let's be honest here. Ryan Getzlaff, the past couple of years, has not been playing at the level that Ryan Getzlaff played at 3-4 years ago,
that series again between Anaheim and Detroit, where the Detroit defenseman just couldn't handle him whatsoever in front of the net.
He hasn't had the same effect. And the other question you need to take into account is he's a center,
right?
And if he can't crack that center spot, I don't see Ryan Getzlaff on this team right now.
So Ryan Getzlaff is not a guy who can make the transition to playing on the wing.
I'm not saying he couldn't do it, but I'm not so sure he'd be the best option to do it.
Okay.
Ryan, back to yesterday, Ducks versus Stars, the only game in the NHL last night. Ryan Getzlaff, again, didn't put up much in the score sheet, but he's still an absolutely dominant player. And, No, I know Richie better than anybody, and I know how much Richie likes Getzlaff. But on this team, Getzlaff, if this is a World Cup of hockey team, I think Getzlaff makes it no problem. As an NHLer, he's so much more dominant than on the international ice. And by that, I mean that he's able to cycle it with Perry mm-hmm. and use his size. You know, Richie mentioned the Brendan Morrow, Yager line. He's another one of those guys. And Drew, you mentioned that. The series that you're talking about against Detroit in 2009, you can't take the puck off of him. Not only is he an amazing skater, stick handler, he's 6'3", 220 pounds. You just can't get the puck off of the guy. And I think he's going to get strong consideration. But for him to have to move to the wing and then beat out Eberle and Sagan, and again, Eberle and Sagan are smaller guys. They're just so quick. They're a lot quicker than Getzlaff. And if there isn't the emergence of a Taze or even Giroux, remember, Giroux wasn't in the talk in 2010. He was barely in the NHL at that point. So it's unbelievable to say Getzlaff might be a long shot, even though I think we'd all agree he's a dominant hockey player. He probably is at this point.
Yeah, and I have Eberle ahead of Sagan. Now,
we have 5 forward spots left. We have 8 forward spots that we've identified as shoo-ins.
Right. Most of them are on the wing, by the way, yeah.
Well, we have the center.
Yeah.
We have, because we've...
Oh, you mean the centers are shoo-ins. I mean, yeah. You got Crosby, yeah. You got Taves.
Right now we need five wingers to probably round out this roster.
Eberle's one of those wingers to me.
Eberle's one. Mm-hmm. Ezzy? Well, do you agree with Eberle?
We're selecting our wingers?
Well, yeah. Do you expect that Jordan Eberle is going to make this team as one of the wingers?
Or would I pick him? Difference.
Fine.
I'm not trying to be difficult. I'm just saying.
Sure. Would you pick Jordan Eberle to make this team?
I'm going to go with Iggy as my winger there.
So Richie.
But I think, again, this is why I asked that, Richie. Mm-hmm. I think Eberle, you know, there's a good chance they take him over Iginla. But if I was picking the team, which I'm obviously not, I would take Iggy over Eberle. But I think Eberle, there's a good chance he will be on the team.
Would you take, is it for you, Richard, is it a question of Eberle or Iginla?
Not necessarily. Okay. I mean, Ezzy and I probably will come up with
Jamie Benn's in there. I mean, there's a lot of guys that they're going to look at.
Right. So give me your remaining 5 players on this team.
To me, James Neal makes the team. Big, strong, fast, great shot. Gives him a little bit of that explosiveness. You know, you have a sniper on the wing. I think that's important, and I think he's earned it. So he makes a squad to me.
Okay.
Did you include Corey Perry already on there?
I don't have Corey Perry in there.
Corey Perry makes that.
Corey Perry makes it.
To me, I was going to say, he's a shoo-in.
Okay. So is he a shoo-in?
Yeah, to me.
Okay,
yeah.
So we can move Corey Perry back up to the
shoo-in
category.
People forget that Corey Perry just a couple of years ago won the Hart Trophy. It's unbelievable how quickly you forget that stuff.
The truth is...
So now we only need 4 wingers from each of you.
4 left?
4 wingers total. We have 9 shoo-ins on forwards. We have 9 forwards that are shoo-ins.
I have Bergeron making the team because even if he doesn't play all the time, first of all, he can do everything. He can pass, he can score, he can defend, but he's also a right-handed face-off man.
Yep.
So when you look at their strengths, you know, it's Taves, but he's a left-handed guy, and Hockey Canada, we talked about this years ago, but Hockey Canada does look at those details of being able to take a right-handed draw in your own zone, and I think Bergeron cracks the squad. He's won a cup. He's done everything possible.
You could almost say Bergeron's a shoo-in.
He's been a loyal soldier to Canada. He's on the team, too, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, so then you have one winger left.
Okay, and I want to mention, too,
we're going to get to your picks in a second there, Ezzy.
Oh, I thought we were going back and forth.
No.
Well, okay, this is Richie's time to shine.
This is Richie's time to shine right now. You'll shine in a moment. You'll shine bright like a diamond.
Good reference.
Did Drew actually just say that? We're going to have to get Reem to cut that up and just, like, loop that. Drew doing Rihanna.
This is where I'm a bit conflicted because I have one slot left, right, for 13th forward.
You have one slot left you need one more winger probably or one more player to round out Team Canada's forwards.
13, right?
13 forwards is what we're assuming.
This is where I'm having an issue, and Jerome Iginla is a guy who's put in time. He's been on 2002 team. He's been on the 2010, both of those gold medal winning teams. He does everything the right way. And yes, partially it depends on slotting in and where they slot in. See, I don't think a guy like Milan Lucic is on my team or Taylor Hall is on my team. Now, they could tear up the NHL next year, but on the way to the season, I don't think Jeff Skinner is on my team.
Not even Jordan Staal?
Not Jordan Staal either. And I think I'm trying to decide really between a guy like Logan Couture, who I'd love his game. And I think he'd really succeed on the international ice. Granted, left-handed shot, plays center, can play the wing as well. And Jerome McGinley.
You haven't mentioned your boy, Jamie Benn.
And Jamie Benn. And Jamie Benn, you know, Drew, you're throwing me.
These are the problems that Team Canada has. These are good problems to have, but these are the problems that they have.
Blessing in disguise.
Another thing I want to talk about is the fact that you have kind of a younger team up front, mm-hmm. but they're all very experienced, meaning
yep. you know,
Giroux final, Taves Cup, Richards Cup, Crosby Cup.
And they've all done the World Junior pipeline to this level.
Do you need that? It's a tough decision.
Do you need the veteran leadership of a Jerome McGinley?
I'm putting Jamie Benn on that squad.
Jamie Benn makes it over Jerome McGinley for you there.
Since Jamie Benn re-signed, he's been lights out for the Dallas Stars. Another goal yesterday.
Kayezi, you have Jerome McGinley as one of your wingers, or one of your the four non-consensus picks.
Yep.
You have three to go.
And this is trouble. I got to mention that I don't know if Reem tweeted this out yet, but Button, Pang, Johnson, Rudy, all those guys that picked their guys, they picked James Neal as well. And it's hard not to pick James Neal, especially Richie, when you consider he could maybe play left wing, usually plays left wing with Malkin, but maybe they play him with Crosby because of his familiarity in Pittsburgh. And even though they're not going to make their ultimate decisions based on guys who play together in the NHL, I look at this team, though, and yeah, I have a different philosophy, but I'm a little bit more old school, and I'm picking Milan Lucic on this team because I want a guy who not only can put the puck in the net, but can rough it up a little bit out there. And I think you need to have that guy on the team. And that's why I'm picking Lucic over Neal. But again, Richie picked the same pick, not the entire team, but guys a lot smarter than me, Button, Pang, and all those guys, and Rudy. So, but I'm going to take Lucic for his toughness element to give the team a little sandpaper.
Okay, you have two more to go. You're not off the hook just yet, my friend.
It's a tough call because I haven't taken Eberle because I'm assuming that Aguinla is going to be taken over Eberle. I'm going to go with Sagan.
Sagan. Okay. One more.
And another guy right now, it basically comes down to, and I could take James Neal or Eberle easily, both guys that a lot of people have slotted in. I could go with Jamie Benn.
There's the Stahl. There's Jordan Stahl. There's Getzlaff. There's a lot of players out there that have not been taken.
There are a lot
and
of players,
and you can agree with Richie on some of your four. You don't have to be completely set.
Well, it's tough though. I mean, when you analyze this, you're not going to go wrong picking anybody really. And a guy that we haven't even talked about that much is Patrick Sharp. A lot of because of his versatility. A lot of people think that he might get a serious consideration as that 13th forward.
Ray Ferraro picked him on TSN.
I think that's talk. I don't think he's going to make that squad. There's too many other players who can also be versatile and are a little bit more talented than he is.
And sure, it might be, you know, it might be just Ray Ferraro really likes Patrick Sharp, but Richie, Patrick Sharp, you know, is a very good offensive player. He definitely warrants to be in the conversation. I'm gonna go with Jamie Benn.
You're going with Jamie Benn as well. Well, there you have it. Let's recap this one more time before we quickly have to go to break. The nine forwards that are the consensus shoo-ins in this room. Sidney Crosby. By the way, is he your captain?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay. Ezzy, you have a Ginlaw on your team. Is Crosby still your captain?
Yeah, it's Crosby's team.
Okay. Sidney Crosby, Steven Stamkos, Claude Giroux, Jonathan Taves, Rick Nash, Mike Richards, John Tavares, Eric Staal, and Corey Perry. Those are the consensus nine.
Wow.
There's agreement around this room that those nine players will make the team, of course, barring injury, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Richie's four sort of non-consensus picks. Jordan Eberle, James Neal, Jamie Benn, and Patrice Bergeron. Ezzy's four non-consensus picks. Jerome McGinley, the wily old veteran. Milan Lucic of the Boston Bruins. His Boston Bruins teammate, Tyler Sagan. And Jamie Benn.
I just realized something, though. There's an issue with my team, though, because I thought we had Bergeron in as a lock.
Nope. You want Bergeron instead of somebody else?
Ugh.
We have a trade to announce.
Well, no, but it's funny, Richie. Now you're picking between three Bruins. Do you drop Sagan out or do you drop Lucic out? Now that I think about it.
Lucic or Sagan? I mean, Sagan, based on up to this point, to me, doesn't make the team. And Lucic, I don't think, is as effective on international ice. Just my opinion.
The clock is ticking. We're up against the commercial break.
Bergeron is on that team for sure.
In whose stead?
I can't do this. I can't take Iggy out. I like Ben. I guess take Ben out and put Bergeron in.
There you have it. There you go.
That's tough decisions. I'm glad I'm not the guy that's in that room making these decisions.
I'm glad I'm documenting them so that when we go back and do this exercise again 6 months from now and our list looks completely different, we'll be able to look back and laugh about it.
It'll look pretty similar.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. This man. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com, where I can confirm that our colleague Dave Minuk has posted the Winnipeg Jets morning papers. So you can check those out. You can kick up your feet and listen to this fine program while reading all about your Winnipeg Jets. Ahead of today's Jets-Senators game.
Drew, your feet are already up.
That's true. I just do the show with my feet up the entire time. 1 p.m. puck drop here on TSN 1290. Your broadcast team of Dennis Bayak, Brian Munns, and Shane Knighty with the call. Hustler and Lawless follow us at 10 a.m. Rick Ralph and the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show begins at 12 noon here on this fine station.
I should mention that Tim Campbell wrote an article, I believe, really late last night or early this morning, and Andrei Pavlik has the flu.
Yeah.
And we're not sure. We're waiting to confirm if Al Montoya is going to start, but it is expected Montoya will start this afternoon versus Ottawa. We should mention that. I know we have Mike Colligan coming up. We're going to talk about the Jets later this morning. But right now, it looks like Montoya is a good chance for starting a net today.
Yeah, Pavlik missed they practiced yesterday in Ottawa, sort of yesterday afternoon. They practiced in Ottawa. Pavlik was nowhere to be found. He's got the flu, and head coach Claude Noel reported that he's down on his back and that it's not the best. You know, it's sort of under the weather. So we would not be surprised, or should not be surprised, if it does end up being Al Montoya in the Jets' net tonight, or this afternoon, rather. But as soon as we get confirmation, and that likely won't happen until probably, you know, 10:45, 11 this morning, because there's no game day skate. There's not, and, you know, until everybody heads down to the arena and you get to see what the situation really is like there, we won't know that, but I'm sure that Hustler and Lawless will bring that news to you as soon as they get it, if we do not get it before then. I believe Remus is working on getting Mike Colligan on the line, so we'll get him up momentarily, I'm sure. And then, of course, when we come back after Mike Colligan, we're going to continue on with the Canadian Olympic team talking about the defensemen.
I think what happens after the forwards, though, Drew, is you go from a luxury of talent to a little bit more of a difficult decisions, but I think you're really, instead of in the forward class as if maybe pushing guys down who really belong to be there, I think in the defense class you may be elevating people who in past years wouldn't be there.
The days of Pronger and Niedermeyer, now we're led by a much younger decor. I agree with you, Richie.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's our good friend from HockeyWriters.com. He covers the Pittsburgh Penguins. You can also read his work on Forbes.com. Mike Colligan. Mike, how are you, buddy?
I am doing pretty good, Drew. How about you?
We are doing very well as well. Mike, we saw the Pittsburgh Penguins here about 2 weeks ago. We're going to see them again here this coming Friday. And, you know, when we saw them here 2 weeks ago, with the glaring weakness that was obvious to anybody who saw them was their defense. They just, I mean, it's hard to believe, but they just couldn't handle the Jets' forechecking, especially the Jets' line at that time, Kane, Jokinen, and Wheeler. You know, has the Pens' defense sort of begun to round into form since 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think a good observation. I mean, I picked up the same thing, and there was a stretch there where the Penguins had some weaknesses against the Toronto Maple Leafs as well. And, you know, looking at their schedule so far this year, I would say that those were two of the weaker games on the schedule, but two of the games that the Penguins definitely struggled with, at least on the defensive end. And there's plenty of offense on the team still. Even losing Jordan Staal, they score plenty of goals. But the defense has been, I would say, inconsistent. I think at least over the last four or five games when they've been on this winning streak now, it's looked a lot better. Matt Niskanen, a guy that's really come into his own the last year or two with the Penguins, he's been out with an injury, but we've seen some great play from some of their younger guys. Simone Dupre, a first-round pick from a few years ago, cracked the lineup out of training camp when a lot of people didn't think he would this year with so many NHL-level defensemen that the Penguins had. But he's starting to play a little bit better. He's getting a little bit more playing time. And I think, it's normal to expect rookies to have kind of that the breaking-in period where they're going to make some mistakes, and I think that's maybe what the Penguins are thinking is, let's get some of the younger guys in there, make the mistakes now when the games maybe aren't as meaningful, and then have them playing really good hockey once the playoffs roll around. And I think we've seen that the group as a whole really come together. They're letting up very few goals. They're giving some good protection to Marc-Andre Fleury and Thomas Vokoun, and that's leading to a lot of wins over the last week or two here.
Mike, it's Ezra here, the guy who always bugs you on Twitter. You mentioned Simone Dupre, and he's a first-round pick, and he's obviously been at the top of the prospect list for the Pittsburgh Penguins for a long time, and he's played quite a few games here. Is his development one of the reasons why they could part with Ben Lovejoy, or was there another reason why they parted with Ben Lovejoy?
You know, I think even his development is a reason they parted with Zdeněk Mihalik in the offseason, because he was a guy that they went out three summers ago now and to the free agent pool, and they said, okay, we need to really shore up our defense. And they spent a lot of money to bring in Zdeněk Mihalik and Paul Martin, $9 million cap hit combined there. And neither really played up to their potential, I think, in Pittsburgh over the first two or three seasons. And I think they thought, okay, you know, at this point, if these guys aren't going to play $4 or $5 million hockey, we've got to start to look to this prospect pipeline that we have coming where, you know, you can get a Simone Dupre that may be able to come in and play for, you know, $1 million or a little bit less. And I think that's when you look at the way the Penguins are constructed, there's obviously a lot of money going to Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Chris Letang is going to be getting a nice new contract in the next year or two here. So it's a top-heavy team, and you need to find ways to get value out of those guys on rookie contracts. And I think that's the point they reached, was they saw enough out of Dupre last year. He played at Wilkes-Barre in their minor league system. He came around, and I thought he was probably borderline. I figured he'd spend another year in the minors, but I think that salary cap issue, you know, where they had to squeeze him in, they had to get, you know, a big contract for, like, Zdeněk Mihalik off the books. And then in the last week, like you said, the Ben Lovejoy trade to Anaheim for a fifth-round pick, I think was a situation where that now they just have too many NHL defensemen. So many guys that have to clear waivers, and at the beginning of the season, they lost another guy, Brian Strait, to waivers. And I think they thought, you know, let's get what we can from this guy. Found a fifth-round pick in Anaheim and made that move. But I think it was more a numbers game at this point where they just have too many NHL defensemen up at this level.
Mike, you mentioned Paul Martin. Last year he had some significant struggles. How has he played this year?
You know, he's still missing the physical element. I don't know that physical was ever part of his game, but compared to last year, I think, which was a pretty consistent failure for him, he's turned it around. I think he looks a little bit better. He's now paired with Brooks Orpik, which may be helping him. He's moved over to the left side, which was different, and he's playing some pretty effective hockey. They move them back and forth, and I think Orpik's a guy that really doesn't get a lot of credit. He's, you know, not really in the top defenseman discussion or anything, but I thought he brought the best out of Chris Letang when he was paired with him last year. I think he's doing the same thing with Paul Martin this year, because he's a guy that's just so steady and reliable that you always know where he's going to be. Even if you make a mistake, he covers for you, and I think that's really helped Martin, because Martin has the skills. He's a great skater. He's great with his stick. He can move the puck really well, which is great for the Dan Bylsma Pittsburgh Penguins hockey system. But, you know, when I look at the way Martin's first couple years have unraveled here, it's been confidence. And it's just, you know, you make that one mistake and it builds on the next one. And it gets to a point where you just have no confidence in your game at all. And I think that's where I've seen a little of that confidence returned to Martin's game, and it certainly helped the Penguins to the point where I think now they've got two or three very solid pairs that at least could not have a repeat performance of the playoffs that they had last year against Philadelphia.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Mike Colligan. He covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for HockeyWriters.com. Mike, you know, one of the acquisitions the Penguins made in the offseason was to acquire Thomas Vokoun to be the backup goaltender, to ostensibly be the backup goaltender for Marc-Andre Fleury. So far this year, you look at the games that they've each played. Vokoun's played 5 games. Fleury's played 7. And Vokoun's numbers are better than Fleury so far this year. Is this still Fleury's team to lead, or is there a potential for a goaltending controversy on the horizon in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, I think that may be what the case is, because you've got two starting goaltenders, I think, in both of those. Vokoun has the better numbers, but I think he's played better. I think, you know, you look at his resume even, he's a guy that's had some really strong years, always one of the top goaltenders in save percentage, despite being on some pretty bad teams in Florida over the years. But he's a guy that he said all the right things, and I'm impressed because when he came to Washington, there was a little bit of controversy last year with Michael Neuwirth, where I think Vokoun thought he was coming in to be the number one guy, and it was a little miffed when he didn't start the opener and then wasn't getting games early on, and I thought, okay, this may not work too well, or coming in and facing a similar situation with Fleury this year in Pittsburgh. But he said all the right things. He's been a great teammate. I don't know if management got to him, or he just sat down and thought, you know, I'm reaching a point in my career where maybe winning is a little bit more important than being that number one guy in the spotlight. But he said all the right things. He's played very well. I think at some point he's going to be in the discussion, you know. I don't think they'll overplay him during this short season. I think they'll continue to kind of have their split right now, which is about two-thirds of the games to Fleury and one-third to Vokoun. But when you get down to the playoffs, this is a team in the Pittsburgh Penguins that's had some failures in the last couple years, and they're not going to accept another first-round exit with all the talent that they have. And I think that's exactly the reason they brought in Vokoun, is to just make sure that goaltending's not the reason that they can advance in the playoffs here. And so I would not be surprised as we go down the stretch that maybe Thomas Vokoun becomes a very serious part of that conversation. And after that, I mean, what's the future of Marc-Andre Fleury in Pittsburgh if he's no longer the starting goaltender and needs a new contract in a year and a half? There's going to be some big decisions to make if Fleury can't become the elite goaltender that he's shown, at least in the past.
Mike, we got to ask you about Brandon Sutter. He was obviously acquired from the Carolina Hurricanes in exchange for Jordan Staal. How is he slotted in on that third line with Matt Cook and Tyler Kennedy? Obviously pretty well, because they've won 5 in a row. But how have you thought he's played so far?
You know, Jordan Staal was a guy that obviously brought a lot of offense from a third line center role. He had to be the best centerman on a third line in the NHL, but so the offense has slipped from that line a little bit. That's a concern for me, I think, because although, you know, the Crosby and Malkin lines are very talented, you can't really go into the playoffs with just two lines. You need that secondary scoring coming from your checking lines, and I haven't seen that from the Penguins so far this year. But as far as the defensive end, Brandon Sutter, I've been very, very impressed with. I saw him in Carolina, but I think he's gotten even better in the last year or two here, and is really a dominant defensive center that's only going to get better. He's a young guy still and is coming into his own, and I think, you know, as he adjusts to the Penguins system, as he gets a little bit more comfortable and then starts to chip in offensively, he's a guy that's got one or two 21-goal seasons on his resume already. He's a guy that I think could be very similar to Jordan Staal for less than half the price, and I think that's exactly what the Penguins were thinking. You know, again, back to how top-heavy this team is, they couldn't spend $5 or $6 million on a third-line center. It just doesn't make sense, and I think that's where they saw the opportunity to send Staal to Carolina, pick up Sutter, who plays a very similar game and can fit into that role well. And I think from a defensive perspective, that third line has been a very big key to the Penguins' recent success. That for a while, I know Sutter hadn't even been on the ice for a 5-on-5 goal, and that's just impressive for the tough matchups that he gets, always starting in the defensive zone. He's a guy that I think, at least on the defensive end, has been probably one of their their strongest performers up front this season.
Mike, you talk about the top two lines, and obviously James Neal is a big part of that. He's once again been performing at a very high offensive level. I guess two-part question. What do you see as his ceiling, I guess, would be part A, and B, could refer back to our last segment. We were talking about the Canadian Olympic team. Do you see him as, you know, a player who is should merit serious consideration for that squad, if not make it?
Yeah, as far as your first question, I think he had 40 goals last year alongside Evgeny Malkin, who had 50 on his own. And so when you look at that combo, it's a dangerous pair. It's something that I think teams have not really figured out how to stop at this point, especially when you throw in a healthy Sidney Crosby. You almost have to pick which line you want to stop. And I think that's tough in its own right. But when I look at what Neal has done, I was very curious to see this year, would he get figured out? I mean, when we compare Ovechkin versus Stamkos, Ovechkin's a guy that got figured out and just hasn't figured out how to adapt to that yet. Whereas you look at Stamkos, he's a guy that's now scoring from everywhere on the ice. He's continuing to put in, you know, the 40, 50-goal pace. And I think that's exactly what I've seen out of Neal. He's now scoring from different areas. They've taken away his favorite spots on the ice, but he's finding ways to get the puck in. And maybe that's easier with a Malkin who creates a lot of space for you. But as far as just a pure goal scorer goes, he's right up there. He's got one of the quickest releases. And, you know, as far looking ahead to Team Canada and building an Olympic team, that's where you think maybe a guy like that fits in. He's a good forechecker. You know, he brings a unique skill set. And when I think, you know, building an Olympic team with just the best players obviously doesn't make sense. We've seen that hasn't worked in a few cases, and we saw maybe what Team USA was able to do by putting together an actual real hockey team where you've got, you know, your role guys, your specialists, your snipers, your third line grinders. And I think that's where you when you're looking for a unique skill set, I think maybe James Neal is that. I don't know if he's maybe one of the most talented forwards in Canada, but certainly brings just a really hard shot, a guy that you need on power play. He's leading the league in power play goals again this season. And I think that's certainly a big factor that may come into play for Team Canada as you look forward here, at least as long as he can continue to stay healthy and produce at this level.
Mike, we'll let you go on this last question. We'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about Tanner Glass. Obviously, he played here in Winnipeg last year, got a two-year contract from the Penguins in the offseason. You know, how has his game been since his transition to Pittsburgh? How's he fitting in with the Penguins?
I think Glass has looked very good. It's been a bit of an adjustment. I've talked to him a few times, and he said there's a lot of new systems that he's having trouble learning. He's trying to get the name, you know, the naming and lingo right. And I think that can, we've seen even a guy like Steve Sullivan came in last year, who's a veteran of 15, 17 years in the league, and he struggled for at least a month or two. But I think as far as on-ice play, Tanner Glass has looked great. I think he's fit in. He's exactly what Dan Bylsma looks for and when he's building this Penguins roster and trying to get guys that plays his type of system. And that's north and south, as you guys know well, you know, skating, forechecking, hitting. Glass is leading the Penguins in hits this year, playing strong defensive hockey. I mean, it's pretty much you're describing Tanner Glass. And that's why I think he's fit in very well on the fourth line. He's even gotten some opportunity on a second line with Evgeny Malkin and James Neal. And, you know, that's the valuable thing to have, is a guy that can bounce around the lineup from top line to fourth line, from center to wing, play some penalty kill. That's what the Penguins were looking for when they signed Glass at a very affordable $1.1 million. And I think so far, so good for Tanner Glass and the Pittsburgh Penguins. And I think he'll be, that's something the Penguins were missing last year, was kind of that grit factor and a guy that could bring that. Because right now, Matt Cook is no longer, maybe good for all of us, no longer the same Matt Cook that he used to be. But, you know, they needed to get kind of that edge back. And I think that's exactly what Glass has brought for them.
Mike Colligan, he covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for HockeyWriters.com. He also writes for Forbes.com. Thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Absolutely, guys. Anytime.
Take care, Mike. Thanks very much, bud. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, McPhillips Toyota, Winnipeg Jets Game Day. Big thanks to Mike Colligan for joining us. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download. You can search for it on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can get it on our website, illegalcurve.com, or you can get it on the TSN1290.ca website. Gentlemen, continuing on with our Olympic discussion, another few minutes on this before we shift into being to our Jets Sens preview coming up at 9 a.m. James Gordon from the Ottawa Citizen is going to join us to talk about the game. We have three consensus defensemen. We were just discussing this off air. Shea Weber, Duncan Keith, and Drew Doughty. No brainers?
Yeah.
Okay. So leaving you with about four non-consensus defensemen each that you're going to have to select. We're assuming they take seven defensemen, and you know, it's a likely number.
Yes. That's what's going to happen, Drew.
Okay, Rich, I'll start with you then. Give me your four defensemen that are going to join Shea Weber, Duncan Keith, and Drew Doughty on the Sochi Olympic team.
Well, I think before we get into, I know you want me to name the players quickly, Drew, but
or just talk about some of the problems with value getting the guys.
Problems the left side. The Team Canada doesn't have a solid left side defenseman, really, so, aside from Duncan Keith. And I know
so
you're
too heavy on the right side.
Too heavy on the right side. And who's going to play the left side is going to be really interesting to me. I think Alex Pietrangelo is on the right side of the third pairing.
Yep.
He skates beautifully. He's a good offensive player. He can play in all situations. If you play for Ken Hitchcock, you're trustworthy. And I think another thing is Hitchcock will be on this coaching staff, I'm almost certain, in some form of strategic capacity, and he'll vouch for him. So if you look at the right side, you say Doughty and Weber and Pietrangelo, and you're like, wow, that's awesome.
But that's three or four right-handed shots.
Right, exactly. Duncan Keith, top side left, top D, probably playing with Doughty. They had good chemistry last Olympics.
Yep.
And he's your top left-handed D. But then who's playing your left side for your other two slots?
That's why I ask you.
I'm asking rhetorically, in a sense. You know, people are talking about the Rangers. Do you want to put Mark Stahl or Michael Delzotto on there? I don't trust Michael Delzotto defensively in an Olympic tournament. Mark Stahl, I like his game, but I haven't seen the Rangers play this year, aside from small portions of games. But last year, he just wasn't the same player as he'd been years before. Maybe it was the concussion. I don't know. But if he plays at the level he did last year, I have some worries about the Canadiens' back end. So then you look at, do you move over guys to the, from the right side to the left, Desi?
Yep.
That's fine on maybe one pairing. And they did it last time, I believe, with Weber and Boyle in the 2010. But you look, you have to have some concern if you're a Canadian hockey fan that you'd be moving two right side guys to the left side, or conversely, elevating somebody who may not be capable of playing those big minutes on the left side. I think somebody who has to be in the equation, probably more so than Delzotto, is a guy like Braden Coburn, because he's big and he's a little bit more trustworthy defensively overall, and he can skate for a big guy, and they don't really need him to be an offensive force, which he's not. He's good offensively, he's not great, but he doesn't need to be that. So, you know, I'm really conflicted about who's filling those seconds, those two slots on the left side. Brent Seabrook, to me, let's kind of go over some players. Brent Seabrook, to me, didn't play well enough in the last Olympics, couldn't keep up, just a smidge behind. I wouldn't put him on the squad. Dan Boyle, I don't mind putting him on as a seventh guy. He's getting older, not great defensively. They have offensive players. Another right side guy, I don't know if he makes a team either for me. So you look at a guy like Chris Letang. Chris Letang's skating ability, transition ability, shooting ability, to me, he's on my team. But the extra spot is where I'm really conflicted. It's that one extra spot in terms of the top six. I'm not sure if I can make a decision as of yet. If I'm a Canadian hockey fan, I'm really hoping that some of these players can elevate their game to the next level, and a decision can be made in 6 months from now. And I know that's taking the easy way out, but that's really how I feel.
I think we've already mentioned Drew Doughty, Shea Weber, Duncan Keith as the three out of the seven that are locks. And I would say Alex Pietrangelo, for me, is a lock. He's just playing unbelievably for the St. Louis Blues there with Shattenkirk as well, who will probably make the American team. Mark Stahl is a guy that I originally had on my team. Very good defensively, big, not as offensively talented as Letang. I'm going to put Letang on the team as well. He's so good offensively, such a good skater on the bigger ice surface. So I'm going to put Letang on there as well. And like Richie, I'm going to put Braden Coburn on the team. A lot of people are picking him. And the reason why Braden Coburn is so valuable is he's big, but he moves well for a big guy. He's a shutdown guy. You're going to need shutdown guys. Weber is a shutdown guy. Keith is a shutdown guy. And Doughty, now that he's a little bit older, has become more of a shutdown guy. And the last guy, Richie, you mentioned Del Zotto. I think Del Zotto was just a little bit a step below some of these guys for the international ice. Del Zotto is very good. He's a very good defenseman. The guy that I'm going to put on the team, and again, if you want to tweet at us and disagree with us, the guy that I'm going to put on the team over Girardi is P.K. Subban. And the reason I'm going to put P.K. Subban on the team, even though he's a right-handed shot, and Richie mentioned that there's too many right-handed shots, Girardi is the other guy that people are slotting in as the right-handed shot. So, but I'm going to put Subban in there for his skating ability and to go on the power play. And because he takes a little bit of a risk, and I think sometimes you need a guy that can do that. Because I think Coburn and Weber are more kind of stay-at-home guys. So I'm going to go with Subban as my seventh guy.
And, you know, you can bring up a guy like a Brian Campbell who can control a game in the neutral zone and offensively. His defensive awareness just isn't there. But he'll be in the consideration, Drew, because of the big ice and because he's a left-side guy. And a guy who can play both sides, actually. And he can play on your power play. But can he be trustworthy enough defensively? And the worry, you know, you talk about the right-side guys. The worry for me is you move a guy not only to the left side, so you have that adjustment to make in a short time span under significant pressure. But then you have the big ice. So you have a guy has a tough enough time. I know we're up against it. Mm-hmm. But a guy has a tough enough time adjusting to the big ice on his side of the ice that he's normally used to playing.
Never mind on his off.
Never mind on his offside.
Sure.
It's you can do it with one guy. I don't think you can do it with two.
As he went out on a limb, you're still not going to go out on a limb and pick your seventh defenseman? Come on. Give me a name.
I actually think...
Go with your heart, Richie.
I actually think even with the defensive drawbacks, I think Brian Campbell will be on the squad.
Okay.
As of now.
It's hard to pick against that, Richie. I mean, last year, what were one of the main reasons why Jason Garrison did well on the power play?
Yep.
Who's feeding them the puck? Brian Campbell. So yeah, I don't think you're going wrong at all with Brian Campbell.
Goaltenders, quickly, because we're right up against it. Consensus, Carey Price, Roberto Luongo, Marc-Andre Fleury. Anybody you want to put
in
on there?
I don't know if it's a consensus, but I'm going with Cam Ward, Roberto Luongo, and Carey Price. I don't have Fleury on the team, and I love Marc-Andre Fleury, and I think he's an excellent goaltender. But to me, Ward is just so consistent, plays so many games for Carolina. Luongo has some of the best numbers in the entire NHL right now, even though it's early, and Price, to me, is the starter.
To me, Carey Price is a starter, and then I think Ward's kind of like your Belfort. Doesn't get a lot of attention. Now, I don't think he's as good as Eddie Belfort was, but doesn't get a lot of attention, but he's solid, and you kind of know what you're going to expect for the most part. The third goalie, if you're going to start with Price, that's why I don't put Fleury on the team too, Ezzy, because I want a veteran influence. And if Luongo's there as a veteran influence, he can play, obviously, if he needs to, but he's also won before, and I think you'd be able to be a good mentor. It's a tough position to take, but I do think he would be trustworthy in that role. And I don't think if you're going to go with Carey Price, you want to take two other younger goaltenders.
Quickly, so you're going with Cam Ward also, Richie?
Yeah, Ward, Luongo, Price.
Drew, I want to quickly just say that in 2002, when Cujo was the number one goalie and Brodeur stepped in, you have to think that if Price falters, are you going to go Ward or Luongo? I would argue that you might go Luongo.
I would think you'd go Luongo over Ward.
And that same thing goes for Fleury, just because of the international experience. But Ward's an excellent goaltender.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we go Jet Sens for the next 90 minutes. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Phillips Toyota Game Day here on TSN 1290.